Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 28, 2014. One person is reported dead at the UN protection site in Melakal after inter-ethnic fighting.
UNMISS military peacekeepers and armed police personnel went into the fray to quell the disturbances and to bring the fighting to an end. There was one fatality involving an IDP. At least another four internally displaced persons were injured.
And residents of Maridi County fear Ebola might hit them again.
From our elder people, the way they describe things, it's like Ebola happened here long time ago. As a disease that has history already in Meridi, there is high chance of Ebola coming to Meridi County.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
Michael, welcome on Studio 13.
Thanks, John.
But let's first go to news. Officials in Upper Nile State say one person is believed to have been killed and eight others wounded on Monday, including United Nations peacekeeper at the UN Protection Civilian Site camp in Melakal. The situation is reported to have remained tense despite government and UNMISS efforts to keep control. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Joseph Contreras, the acting spokesperson of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says the clashes broke out on Monday after one of the internally displaced persons assaulted a UNMISS hired security officer working with the warrior security company serving in the camp.
Fighting did break out between groups of youths in our protection of civilian sites at the mission's compound in Melakal in the late afternoon of Monday, the 27th, UNMISS military peacekeepers and armed police personnel went into the fray to quell the disturbances and to bring the fighting to an end. There was one fatality involving an IDP. At least another four internally displaced persons were injured, and four of our Indian military peacekeepers suffered minor injuries as they tried to separate the two fighting groups.
Contreras says the four UN peacekeepers who were wounded are from India. Upper Nile State Information Minister Peter Hoth confirmed to VOA in a telephone conversation that the clashes had occurred. Contreras says the fighting among the youth involved the use of machetes and sticks. He says the UNMISS peacekeepers and armed police had to use tear gas to disperse the crowd in an effort to separate the two fighting groups.
Initial indications suggest that indeed it involved one group of mainly Nuer youths against one group of mainly Shilluk youths. Right now the situation is quiet but tense.
Contreras also says tension at the UNMISS camp in Melakal prior to the clashes had remained volatile following the kidnapping of two UN officials in Melakal town earlier this month. Those UN officials are missing. This is not the first time clashes have occurred among the IDPs at the camp in Melakal. Contreras says in March of this year, a related clash among IDPs also led to 10 people being killed. The UNMISS camp in Melakal houses close to 20,000 IDPs who are taking refuge following outbreak of clashes in December last year between government forces and rebels loyal to former South Sudanese Vice President Riek Machar. Meanwhile, Contreras also says that on Sunday, another fight among the IDPs at the UNMISS camp at the UN House in Juba left at least 60 people injured. He says the clashes are not politically motivated. For VOA News, I am Waka Simon Wudu from Juba.
In a report released yesterday, anti-corruption and environmental watchdog Global Witness says it is concerned about a new oil deal that South Sudan and Spain's Star Petroleum Company are negotiating. Global Witness says it fears the deal will harm the environment and take away the livelihood of ordinary South Sudanese. Global Witness conducted a seven-month investigation into the negotiations between South Sudan government and Star Petroleum, which is bidding to operate two oil blocks in South Sudan. In its research, the NGO found out that Star is closely connected to a businessman convicted of a million euro fraud, and that there is no information about who owns Star Petroleum. Global Witness researcher Emma Vickers says she is worried by the deal because South Sudanese government is negotiating it behind closed doors. Vickers says there are also concerns about the environmental damage that might result if the contract is awarded to Star Petroleum. She says a lot of farmers and others would lose access to their land. Global Witness says the government of South Sudan must prove that striking a deal with Star Petroleum will help not harm those farmers and cattle herders. Ignacio Laseca is the head of Star's legal department. He told South Sudan in Focus by mail that the Spanish company will take great care not to damage the environment or the livelihood of farmers and others. His email also refutes many of the claims made by Global Witness about the petroleum company. We made repeated attempts to reach someone at the Ministry of Petroleum and Mining for comments, but no one was available.
Star Petroleum is not the only foreign company that has been blamed for ignoring the well-being of the people of South Sudan. In a book, In the New Kings of Crowd, Luke Patia says the government of South Sudan wanted to investigate all foreign oil companies, including China's CNPC, over alleged environmental damage. Our web editor, Karen Voxovel, spoke with Patia about CNPC track according in South Sudan.
The Chinese have traditionally not been very good at interacting with local communities, bringing them into projects. Is that still the case?
I think that the Chinese oil company in South Sudan is recognizing that having a hands-off relationship with local communities, or having that relationship managed by the national government, be it in Sudan or South Sudan, is a bad idea. That they need to have a greater participation in how their operations are affecting the people living in the area around it and the region. There's been environmental damage in oil regions, and CMC really needs to turn it around. And unfortunately, you know, there's not a lot of enforcement of law in Sudan and South Sudan, of environmental law.
What are some examples of environmental damage from oil in South Sudan?
It's usually the dumping of chemical waste from oil production, or the poor holding of produced water that comes out of the ground when oil is produced, and usually needs to be either reinserted into oil wells or handled properly. So often companies, because there's no enforcement, because there's a lack of infrastructure in these oil regions, they're often taking the easy road and making large pits to hold these wastes and produced water, chemical water, that not only livestock but also the population itself are getting into contact with and becoming sick. And in the case of cattle, there's been deaths as well.
And has the government, the South Sudanese government, said anything or done anything about this environmental damage?
Before the civil war began, there was a lot of talk brewing in Juba of a large-scale environmental audit of all the operations of companies, not only CNPC, but its partners that had been in southern Sudan and now South Sudan over the years. To my knowledge, that has sort of fallen off the priority list for obvious reasons, which is unfortunate because the spotlight has never properly been shone on what happened to the environment during the oil years, during production, because there was a conflict going on. Everyone's attention was how oil was fueling the war. No one was looking at how it was impacting local communities and how it was impacting the environment in South Sudan.
The South Sudan Chamber of Commerce launched a program this week to promote quality in service and productions in South Sudan's business community. Companies say the award program could boost the nation's economic fortunes. For VOA News, Jacob Achiek has this report from Nimule.
This is the first time the Chamber of Commerce is organizing an annual award competition. The contest will publicly acknowledge companies' effort to provide good services and products, and many businesses are being encouraged to compete for the award. Simon Akwinding, Secretary General of the South Sudan Chamber of Commerce, said the first winner of the quality award will be announced in December of this year.
This quality award is to achieve a number of issues, including employment, best company that is employing people locally here, the best local producer, the local content, the quality, you know, of what is being produced, the compliance of what we have in our companies in South Sudan.
Akwe said he is encouraging all South Sudanese businesses to take the new initiative seriously. He said it will help South Sudan to move toward a better economic future. He said every type of business can compete for the award. That includes small companies and new businesses that are exploring innovation and technology.
It's our own, and let us make it a successful project. It will be an annual award, and we believe companies will be able to compete. Competition is very important. We will want to promote fair and healthy competition between companies so that we don't just give names for things that we don't do.
Basil Maneshe, CEO of Zain South Sudan Telecommunication Company, welcomed the new program.
We are very proud to be part of this quality award program, and we truly believe that having such award within South Sudan, it will better serve the nation, it will better serve the quality of services for the people of South Sudan.
Ian Alasuwosi Evelt, the managing director of South Sudan Beverage Limited, said most companies, including his, are excited about the potential impact of the quality award program. He said it could help do away with the wider held belief that imported goods are better than those products by local companies.
All the services and products that are locally produced, in fact, most times better than the imported products because they're fresher. When you are consuming a imported product or using services that are not locally provided, you are creating jobs somewhere else and putting jobs in South Sudan at risk. So let's all work together to show that local is best and that we can provide economic development for South Sudan.
Registration for the program began 2 days ago. Already 69 companies have applied to compete. Applications have so far come from the aviation, agriculture, and manufacturing sector, telecommunication companies, general trading, and pharmaceutical companies. Akwe said companies can register up until 3rd of December. The winner of the first round of award will be business, which set high standard and makes the extra effort to provide the high level of services to the people of South Sudan. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Nimole.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, efforts are underway to prevent the deadly Ebola virus from entering South Sudan. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you feel about the meaning of your name?
For me, it's not good for me because I don't like it. The name is Nyalang, so I don't like it. The reason I don't like it, because my grandmom, I think she was suffering. Then when I was born, then she liked to call me Nyalang, Nyalang, yeah? Because she was suffering. That reason she called me Nyalang.
My name is Maureen, meaning a beautiful flower, which means in and out, I should be beautiful. So I love my name. I love the name.
I can say there is a relationship between my behaviors and the significance of my name. Yes, because I have the name of a tree, and this tree always have good fruits. My name is Aka.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. As the Ebola outbreak rains the three Western African countries and raises fears bordering abroad, some are questioning whether the World Health Organization is being overloaded. A proposal for a new global agency to deal strictly with Ebola is gaining the support. VOA's Jordi Kapua reports.
Dr. Harvey Rubin says that local phenomena can have global consequences, and he points to the Ebola epidemic as a prime example. Rubin is director of the Institute for Strategic Threat Analysis and Response at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. He and ISTAR's associate director, Nicholas Seidel, have written in New Scientist magazine that global infectious disease control, as it now stands, is a disjointed effort riddled with gaps and inconsistencies. Rubin says this can be seen in the response to Ebola.
The world's response has been late and incomplete. This is a tragedy at many, many levels, and obviously people are dying, commerce is impacted, economic development is impacted, but overwhelmingly people are dying, and we could have done a better job as a global community. There are some groups that have been absolutely fantastic, like Doctors Without Borders, and individual aid groups have been putting their own lives at stake, but the global community has dropped the ball.
Rubin says many have been worried about such a scenario for a long time.
A lot of this, maybe not all of it, but a lot of this could have been avoided with a more robust global governance system for infectious disease. This was predictable. We've been talking and writing about this for a long time now, for at least several years. Other people have been writing about this.
TB, malaria, various types of hepatitis, MERS, the flu, measles, polio, and Ebola. These are some of the infectious diseases the WHO has tracked and monitored over the years. And then there are the many non-communicable diseases on the rise, such as diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, and cancer.
Believe me, I'm not critical of the World Health Organization or any of the other groups. They are so overstretched with so many things to worry about. Arguably, more people die of infectious diseases than just about anything else. A lot of these are preventable diseases, and the World Health Organization has a huge mandate.
Dr. Rubin says there's a looming health crisis that's not getting nearly as much attention as Ebola.
If I had to list the number one problem that we see across the borders and certainly in this country, it's antibiotic-resistant bacteria. We have an epidemic already and an impending doom and disaster, and I don't want to overstate this, but we have organisms in this country in our hospitals that are resistant to just about every antibiotic that we have. Antibiotic-resistant bacteria is an enormous problem.
He's calling for a global governance structure for infectious disease, a place where any nation can go and raise the alarm about a potential infectious threat. He says it would provide a more focused approach.
What kinds of resources are available for us? Are there experimental drugs that we could start developing? Are there ways to distribute these drugs? Are there ways to do surveillance that's meaningful? Are there ways to harmonize and align various regulatory aspects of getting drugs and vaccines to the places that are needed? That's what we mean by a focused approach on infectious disease. There is no other group like that.
He says the proposed global governance structure for infectious disease should be a public-private standalone agency that receives serious input from the United Nations and others. The New Scientist article lists four interconnected goals. First, coordinate the collection, sharing, and analysis of infectious disease information in real time. Second, encourage the private sector to develop and distribute affordable drugs, vaccines, and diagnostics. Third, establish a network of international centers for fundamental research into microbial threats. And fourth, promote standards for best laboratory, regulatory, and ethical practice. Rubin says the aim is not to have such an agency bogged down in bureaucracy.
We want to have it streamlined. We want to have decision-making with adequate input and transparent, and with the recognition of world leaders that this can only help everybody. There are no borders here. Out of all the diseases that we talk and lecture to the students about, we would always say, oh, Ebola is over there. It's remote. It burns itself out. Now it's in New York. It's in Texas. We have to rethink from the beginning our sort of entrenched ideas.
He says it could begin as a grassroots effort, but adds it may be just the right time for it to happen.
when I've given this talk around the world, I have enormous support by members in my own medical community, a lot of the NGOs, even the engineering community and the policy community. So the academics really understand this, and we're used to collaborating across countries and across domains and across disciplines. The buzzwords around now are innovation and multidisciplinary. Well, if anybody wants innovation and multidisciplinary, this is it.
The University of Pennsylvania medical professor says it must be a self-sustaining agency with innovative ways of funding. Dr. Rubin says it won't work if it has to rely on donors. The staff of the Institute for Strategic Threat Analysis and Response includes doctors, lawyers, business leaders, engineers, and political scientists. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
We still have more news on health issues to you on our today's health segment. We are looking at Ebola in Western Equatoria. Residents of Maridi County fear that Ebola could spread to their area from the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. As of October 21st, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say more than 65 cases of Ebola virus have been reported in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and about 50 people have died. This outbreak is unrelated to the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. Health officials say they have formed a task force ready to move into action should an Ebola case be reported in South Sudan. Charlton Doki recently returned to Juba from Maridi and has this report for VOA.
The people of Maridi have good reason to be afraid. One of the world's first Ebola outbreaks occurred in Maridi and in Zara counties and surrounding areas in 1976. The World Health Organization says during that outbreak, the Ebola virus killed 151 people out of 284 reported cases in Maridi and Najero counties. Another outbreak in Maridi and in Zara in 1979 killed 22 people out of 34 cases. It's believed hundreds of other Ebola victims died in inaccessible rural villages. Maridi resident David Bawire says young people did not live through that time, but they know about it.
I heard from our elder people the way they describe things. It's like Ebola happened here long time ago. And as a disease that has history already in Maridi, there is high chance of Ebola coming to Maridi County. So I'm so much worried about it all my time.
People travel quite freely across the porous border between South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. The border is a 45-minute drive from Maridi town. That worries resident George Mojomojo.
If the disease is now in DRC Congo, then there is high chance, if it is not controlled well from that side, then it can reach Maridi very easy. Because the distance is not very far. People also do move from the border, they cross and then they come. If that movement is not restricted or anything is not done, then Ebola can easily reach our county.
Bushmeat is believed to be the origin of the current Ebola outbreak. The first victim's family hunted bats which carry the virus. Countless bats living on trees around Maridi town are noticeable as they squeak loudly. Mojomojo says he fears the bats could transmit the deadly disease to the area's residents.
I have a very big concern about the bats because, you know, from Maridi here, they normally fly this side of it, southward. And then on our south, we have the DRC Congo. We don't know their final destination. You never know, they might have gone deep into DRC Congo. And then according to what we have been hearing, they also transmit the Ebola virus and all other things. If they go to Congo and then they eat some fruits, mango, maybe lemon, pawpaw, and all other things, should it happen that they eat it from there and then they come with it, then there is a high chance we shall get Ebola.
Dr. Sevia Chandi, head of Maridi Civil Hospital, agrees with Mojomojo that bats are a risk factor in the spread of Ebola. Both Mojomojo and Bawire say they want the government to do something about the scores of bats living on the town's trees. Bismarck Yoromas, Wildlife Forces Deputy Inspector for Maridi County, says they are aware of the danger posed by the bats, which often migrate between Maridi and Congo. He says wildlife authorities believe the bats serve no purpose and plan to dislodge them from the trees.
Now no end na katwa inu haiwande as in yogod finus bita insan bikunu kabu bisababu.
Now we have measures.
These birds should not be allowed to stay amidst human beings because they are dangerous. They can spread diseases. So there is an organization called Fauna and Flora International, which we requested to come and help us remove these birds so that we can be free. Unfortunately, when fighting broke out in Juba last year in December, it scared them and they did not come.
Christo Taban, the Maridi County Disease Surveillance Officer, says Maridi residents, like most people in Western Equatoria State, love bush meat. He says some hunters often take home animal carcasses from the forest, even if they don't know what killed the animals, something he says could spread Ebola. Dr. Chandi admits Maridi Hospital does not have the capacity to handle a large Ebola outbreak. But he says the WHO has trained local health workers to test and treat suspected Ebola patients.
We trained clinical officers, we train laboratory technicians and nurses in Maridi County, Yambio, Najero, because these are the three counties at risk. So we send these people for 1 week training in Yambio, and they are all alert.
Dr. Chandi says, should an Ebola case surface in Maridi County or other nearby areas, the WHO has provided healthcare workers with medical supplies, including protective gear and disinfectants used in the management of Ebola cases. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Michael. Iraqi Kurdish Peshmerga fighters are headed to Kobani, Syria, to help Syrian Kurds fight Islamic State militants for control of the town just south of the Turkish border. Kurdish officials said 80 fighters equipped with artillery and machine guns are to fly to Turkey today, cross the border, and join the battle for Kobani. Another 72 are expected to arrive tomorrow. Foreign ministers and representatives from 40 nations are meeting today in Berlin to focus on helping Syria's neighbors cope with the huge number of refugees who have fled their country during more than 3.5 years of war. Jordanian Foreign Minister Nasser Judda warned of what he called host country fatigue in trying to keep pace with the needs of so many additional people. And finally, Russia announced today it will recognize the results of upcoming elections in two separatist regions of eastern Ukraine. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said the voting, scheduled for November 2nd, would be important for the legitimization of power in the unrecognized People's Republics of Donetsk and Luhansk. While the rest of Ukraine headed to the polls on Sunday, nearly 3 million voters were unable to cast ballots in the eastern part of the country. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with a song in Bari language by Freedom Boys.
Kiki, Koneta Nangura,
We have been listening to Freedom Boys with that song in Bari language. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.